All right, welcome to another episode of It's a Long Road, the Rambo Series podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 2, where we are covering Rambo, First Blood, Part 2, often considered by many fans and Rambo fans and Sly fans to be the most fun of the five Rambo films. I often say it's like the Rocky IV of the Rambo franchise. Sean, today you are my guest. You are a host of I Must Break This, a podcast. We've recorded a couple times together on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network. You're one of those shows on the network, a welcome member of that network. Sean, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me, man. I was a little worried when you started this project up. I was like, man, when does Ryan not like my show? Maybe does he not like me? I don't know. When am I going to get my moment? But no, I'm kidding, of course. But yeah, no, it's a pleasure coming on for this one, man. Thank you.
Oh, well, I love having you on. I love having you on the network. Why don't you talk about what your show is on the network?
Yeah, thanks, man. I Must Break This podcast is the fan podcast that looks at the cinematic career of my favorite action hero, who is Mr. Dolph Lundgren. I've been doing the show now for 5 years, which is pretty wild to consider and think. But we pretty much on the show, we go through Dolph's entire filmography, film by film. Each episode is tackling a film of his, of course. We go in chronological order. So we started, episode one was Rocky IV back in the doldrums when I had no idea about podcasting or anything like that. So the episode is pretty rough, pun intended, of course. But we go through his filmography. And it's wild to think, but I'm actually slowly coming to the end of this journey. I'm now at about 2016, 2017. So there's still about maybe a dozen or so films left in his filmography. But it's hard to believe that I'm at this point. But it's been a ton of fun. I've gotten to meet and podcast with and build some friendships with a lot of people, such as yourself, obviously. But what I've also gotten to do in the show is I've gotten to interview quite a few individuals who've worked with Mr. Lundgren over the years. So if you go through the episode archives, I mean, we're at like, I think 90 episodes I've put out, which is weird. But I've gotten to speak with directors and actors and screenwriters and everybody in between who has had a hand in working on many of these films. I even got to speak with Dolph's stunt double, Tony Messenger. So yeah, it's been a real treat. I've enjoyed doing it. And yeah, thank you.
Well, that's awesome. Great introduction of your podcast. If you haven't already, check out your episodes on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast feed, but also the archive episodes on your standalone feed that you have as well. Yeah, thanks for joining our network. It's great. I mean, Dolph belongs on the Last of the Action Heroes. Come on. I mean, he belongs on that.
Yeah.
Mount Rushmore of action heroes. I love him. Great guy.
Yeah. Well, it was crazy. I think I was doing the show about three and a half years or so, and then we got in contact. I mean, we had been in contact prior to that. But then I think it was when we discussed The Expendables, you graciously extended the invite for the podcast network. And it was something that I hadn't even considered. And I was a little, you know, leery on. Like, I had no idea about podcasting or networks or anything like that. But it was actually one of the best things I think I've ever done with the show. And, so thank you.
I think you were the first one to say yes to me.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that.
Like I said, it's been a ton of fun. I hope the listeners do enjoy the show. I mean, I realize, look, I'm
nobody comments. Nobody comments on anything.
Nobody comments?
On anything.
I'm completely aware, I'll just admit this right now, I'm completely aware that in the realm of action heroes, okay, you have Arnold and Sly, those guys are kind of the top tier,
sure.
And then Dolph has always kind of been mid-tier, if you will. So I'm fully aware of that. I realize that a lot of the movies that he has done are, for lack of better words, not that great, to be honest. I'm fully aware of that. But I do have a ton of fun doing the show, and so I do hope that response has been good and that people do enjoy the shows. A lot of times, especially for the bad films, we crack beverages as we're watching them, but it doesn't become a wannabe stand-up comedy podcast by any means.
No, so. What I meant by nobody comments, I didn't mean specifically your show, just in general. It's often, and I'm kind of guilty of this too, like I listen to other podcasts myself, yours included, and I'm pretty bad, and I've tried to make a better effort at it, and I have done so, but I even now having this conversation, I want to do a better effort of reaching out to people and saying, hey, I enjoyed this. In fact, I actually did it the other day. I actually take that back. I actually did it literally 2 days ago. It's a hockey podcast to listen to. Anyways, I know this guy is just a ham and egger like me, but covering the hockey team that I follow. And I actually said, hey, great episode. And I made a comment that he knew that I was listening to the episode. It was something near the end of his episode. And he really appreciated that. And so if you're listening to this and you're a listener of Sean's podcast or mine, it's really nice to hear the feedback. But we know people are listening, Sean. The numbers show that people are listening. So keep up the great work. Okay, now let's roll into Sly and your fandom with Sly. Having you come on for the Ramble First Blood Part 2 season. I also want to say, it's not that I never called you. I got more guest hosts than I thought I was going to have. So I'm actually, like, you were supposed to come on the first season. I just ran out of space. The movie ran out. Like, I had more guests lined up. So you're near the beginning of season two. So I was telling people, oh, I'll have you on again for season two, the people that were season one. But I don't know if that's going to necessarily happen. There's going to be people that are going to get bumped because I have more guest hosts than movies now, it looks like. Okay. So the point is, yes, you were one of the first, of course. It just didn't happen in the first season. I just thought I was going to go through it slower.
If I had to pick one that I would much rather discuss with you, it's going to be two. So in a weird way, I feel like you saved the best for me. So
oh,
thank
good.
You.
Well, you're going to come on again, but it might be part five, you know, if you want to come on for part five. We need guest hosts for that as well. Okay. So what is your fandom with the second film and with Sly in general?
Like so many of us are in their late 30s, 40s or so. I mean, I feel like before the Marvel Cinematic Universe was what it is, and before it was dominating Hollywood, these were our superheroes, okay? Guys like Stallone and Schwarzenegger and Dolph Lundgren and Van Damme and even Steven Seagal, if you want to go down that realm. These were our real-life superheroes, okay? These were these action heroes who, in a lot of ways, are kind of rarefied beings. You know what I mean? They have these physiques that, you know, many can, you know, only dream about. You know what I mean? And so seeing them on screen was amazing. You know, I kind of long for the days when Hollywood was not made up of nothing but franchises and IPs. That's what's driving Hollywood, you know, nowadays. But back in the 80s, man, it was the new Schwarzenegger movie, the new Van Damme picture, you know, and that, those names were not only used to kind of help sell a picture, but open a movie. I mean, it's really weird to think about that there was a time when, you know, a name could open a movie. I mean, I feel like he's not an action star, but Jim Carrey, you know, I mean, back in the mid-90s, you know, it was the new Jim Carrey movie. And so my experience is pretty similar to other people. I mean, I looked up to these guys wholeheartedly. I remember my dad making jokes because I watched a lot of these films with my dad. And I remember him always making jokes that, yeah, these guys use roids, but not saying that, you know, steroid use is acceptable by any means. But I remember my dad always kind of thinking like, I'd much rather my son idolize one of these guys who may use, you know, these performance enhancing supplements rather than, you know, someone who's using other illicit substances or who is actively breaking the law. That makes sense. And so Rambo was one of those characters. It's kind of weird to think about. And again, I really want to go back to these days, but it's weird to think about how we had R-rated films that were used to kind of market toys to children. Rambo was one of those things. I really hadn't sat down and seen a Rambo movie because, you know, it was R-rated. I hadn't sat down and seen RoboCop because it was R-rated, but he was in the public consciousness. Right. He was in, all kids knew about them. So I had the toys, I watched the cartoon.
There's video games too back then.
Video games, yeah, it was amazing. And I think, I want to say I finally sat down. This is shameful for me admitting it. I knew who Rambo was. I knew John Rambo. I knew the score, the theme music, all that. But I really didn't sit down and watch a Rambo movie until 2002, 2003. Well, I'd seen them on cable, of course. They popped up on cable. They were edited. But if you remember, Artisan Entertainment, now it's Lionsgate, but Artisan Entertainment released a 3-pack of DVDs. Of the Rambo movies, yep. And they were First Blood. The first one, I think, was in a blue cover. First Blood Part 2 was a white cover, and then Rambo 3 was a red cover. Or maybe I'm wrong with that, but it was something like that. Yeah, I remember buying those, and they had really cool documentaries. David Morrell lended the commentary track to one of the films, and I remember Rambo 3 had a really interesting documentary about how Afghanistan was in the media had become the villain, if you will, where in Rambo 3 they were, you know, the allies or something like that. There was some
sympathetic cause, yeah.
Yeah.
Weird to think that Russia was invading. That's a weird Russia invading the country. That's weird. Okay, sorry, continue.
So that was pretty much my experience. I know it's kind of shameful to admit, but I knew who he was. I knew the character. I loved the character thanks to the toys and the cartoon, but I really didn't sit down and fully watch a Rambo movie from beginning to end until my late teens, early 20s, I think.
What's there's no shame in that. I mean, we'll shame you a little bit. This is the the Rambo podcast. You know, it wouldn't be fair if we didn't shame you a little. There is no wrong time to see the Rambo films. Just do it as soon as you can. I think you're also just a little bit younger than me, but I think you're at least 10 years younger than me.
I'm 39.
So I'm 47 in October, so 8 years younger. But that's a lot. Like, if you think of when I'm 12, you're 4. Of course, you wouldn't watch these movies. You know, I saw the first film, First Blood, when I was 8, 9 years old, and you were just born. But that's like a lifetime of difference for pulp culture when you're a kid. I definitely grew up on these films. I've mentioned that. I won't keep saying that for our listeners. But we might have a new listener because you come on this episode because people will follow you. So that being said, I did watch these growing up. I'm glad you got to see them and you get to rewatch them. And today we're going to cover the next part in the film. Last episode we talked about Rambo coming out of prison. You know, he's been assigned this mission. He goes to get basically his mission briefing and he meets Murdoch and all this stuff. So we're getting all these characters are kind of been introduced. We're getting the flavor of, you know, especially the Murdoch character, that he's kind of nonchalant or whatever it is, or he's more of a bureaucratic kind of BS government official type thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to start the scene. So Rambo has just looked at the map of where he's supposed to go or where he's supposed to sight the prisoners of war, or apparently where they're supposed to be or where they're going to be sighted. Yeah, he's basically got to confirm, are they there or are they not there? So the mission itself, I think, is a wholesome mission, so to speak, or it's a valid mission. Here we go. So we're going to cut to the scene where Rambo looks at the map, and then he's going to start a conversation with Colonel Troutman on their way to another briefing.
Thailand across Laos into the mountains of Vietnam in a drop zone. Be flying a ceiling of 250 feet when you bail out. Think you can handle it?
Try.
He says like a 250-foot ceiling when he drops out. That's a very... I'm not a parachuter. Never done an air jump before. That's low, is it not?
The big thing about this film that I have noticed right out of the gate that I think is extremely important to note is just how vastly different this film is from First Blood. It's a completely different animal. I mean, yes, it's a sequel, okay, obviously, but it is so completely different in terms of style, in terms of tone. I mean, even if you look at the coloring, that's the thing that I think is so amazing about this. The first movie, you know, I love the coloring of it fits the tone of it perfectly because it's, you know, in the Canadian woods and fits the tone perfectly because it's very dark. And so you have the first movie has a lot of dark colors and it's just very muted and moody. This film is so much brighter than the previous film. You know what I mean? The coloring of it is so much richer. The first one, it's not like the first one took place, you know, at night or in the dark the entire movie.
A lot of daytime,
but it's a very dark daytime. This is very, very bright. And I think that lends itself perfectly to the film because, I mean, if you look at the First Blood, the original movie, I don't think it really needed a sequel. I think what this film is doing is not only is it lightening things up, but this film, I mean, just going along with what you said about the big drop, I think what this film is doing is this film was made to, okay, we established in the previous movie that John Rambo was a force of nature and was amazing. Well, you know what we're going to do in this film is we're really going to show audiences. We gave audiences a little bit of taste about how he was an army of one, if you will. But this film, we're going to give him a mission that is pretty impossible with so many obstacles that could kill a regular man. But we're going to make it to where he is that army of one. We're going to create a movie around that, showing audiences that he is the ultimate soldier.
Yeah, first one, he was kind of leashed. He was on a leash because he was beholden to the laws of the land. He wasn't able to do what he really could do because he didn't kill anybody except for that one cop in the helicopter. But, you know, he wasn't let loose. This movie, yes, he gets to be let loose. He gets to play in the yard now. He let the dog off without the leash in his own backyard or whatever, and he gets to go nuts. So
just look at Stallone here. Just look at his physique here compared to the First Blood. Now, he's an actor who's always been in phenomenal shape.
Right.
But 1985 Stallone is Stallone in his prime. Not only is he the biggest movie star in the world, but he has completely transformed his physique, his body fat, everything, to where he doesn't even appear human. I mean, he is a complete chiseled out of stone. I mean, and that lends itself perfectly to Rocky IV, where his physique in Rocky IV is completely different than where it had been in the previous Rocky movies, which coincidentally came out the same year as this one. But I mean, just looking at the screen that you have it paused at, I mean, you can see, and he's got to be what, a 28-inch waist? I mean,
it's insane. Yeah,
you know, and his biceps are the size of the waist. I mean, it's just emasculating to look at.
Oh yeah, I know. It's fantastic. He's in fantastic shape, and it does lead to what you said at the beginning of this episode of that superhero idea for us as young kids watching this. It was our superheroes. These were men that were larger than life, both in capabilities and abilities. We couldn't match this, so they were superheroes to us. These were our Marvel superheroes for sure.
Since you're going in solo, you'll have to rely on more equipment than you've ever used before, and use it. What I'm saying is, don't try the blood and guts routine. Let technology do most of the work. And John, I want you to try to forget the war. Remember the mission. The old Vietnam's dead.
Sir, I'm alive. It's still alive, isn't it?
If I'm alive, it's still alive, isn't it? That's true. So the war's in its head, right? That's the old saying, the war inside my head. Let's go back to the technology parts. So this film really, certainly these scenes that you and I are going to cover in this episode, really focuses on the technological aspect of this mission, which is kind of funny. I think in 1985, this is 37 years ago, and it's funny to look at the computers, the machines they're using, very quaint and antique for our eyes in 2022. But even back then, I look at the machines, being in the military myself, I'm thinking to myself, what are they doing? I don't understand what they're tracking or what they're, anyways. But here, you're talking about the aesthetics and the look and the feel of this film. James Cameron, as you probably know, was a co-writer of this movie. What he did with this film and what he changed from First Blood and it stayed with this film was the same thing he did with Aliens and Terminator 2. In the second Aliens film, which he wrote and directed, he took that first film, which was like almost like a horror film, and made it like this action, like over-the-top crazy film. Same with Terminator 2, even though it was his first film, was Terminator 1, was also like a horror film. He made Part 2 like this over-the-top crazy action film. James Cameron, what he did is, with Part 2, he accelerated like the action, the technology. James Cameron's really big on this technology. So I think the story beat in this film was his, was the idea of the actions amped up, yes, but also that technology part. I think James Cameron's really big, both in real life and within film, the idea that technology will, it's man versus technology, which one will win type thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I hate saying this because Terminator 2 is one of my all-time favorite movies, and I love the film that we're talking about today, obviously, but I'm not the biggest fan of James Cameron.
Sure.
His ego has always just rubbed me the wrong way. And it's amazing because it's not like he has a heck of a lot of films under his belt. He has less than, 12 films he's directed, he knows. I mean, I think this is the thing about him, is he's always known how to make movie going experience. You know what I mean? He's known how to do that. And so, yeah, I never really thought about that, but you're exactly right. When he came in to write both this film and Aliens, yeah, he decided to really amp up the action part of it. And I'd like to think, you know, he looked at First Blood, and when he was contracted to write the sequel, he said, well, you know what, let's, kind of like what I said earlier, let's give audiences, we established in the first film that he was a force of nature, well, let's give a film, let's create a film that is a spectacle that really shows that. And I think on that level, it certainly delivers.
So here we have the, like I said, the showcasing all this technology. Like, what are they looking at? Because it reminds me of, like, the original series of Star Trek almost. You hear the beeping sound and what have you. Because you remember the bridge of the original series of Star Trek? You always hear the beeping. Because you have all these guys here, and I don't know quite what they're looking at. Because really, all that's really happening is Rambo's going to go on a plane, and he's going to get parachuted down to take pictures of whether or not these POWs exist or not. That's confirmed. They're just confirming, do they exist? And if so, Colonel Troutman and his team will come in and extract the POWs. That's the mission. That's all Rambo's got to do, according to the film. But I love all this technology here, and Murdoch's going to go, like, you know, you're going to find this hard to believe, but this is all for you, and this is to keep you safe. I still don't get what any of this does, other than, yeah, it'll track his location. I don't know if GPS was even a thing back then. Do they have satellites in the sky watching Rambo's journey. I don't know if they had GPS back then. Were they able to put a tracking unit in him? I just don't know what this technology is actually doing to keep him legit safe.
This is a really cool progression, character-wise, from the first film. Because, I mean, and like we talked about earlier, how this film wasn't even really needed and how it's in stark contrast with the first one. But what I like about this is you see that Rambo is completely out of his element here. I mean, this is a guy who has lived off the land, who has arguably, you could say, spent more time in prison cells than he has in the real world. And suddenly now he's put into this high-tech universe with devices and all these computers and all these monitors and everything that are completely foreign to him, completely alien to him. And I think that's one thing that this film does really well, is just showing how, you know, how out of his element he is at this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It does showcase that. I'm looking at it just at the idea of, like, the literal... I've done this with films, not lately, but as I get older, now that I'm an adult and I've lived adult life, so to speak, and I'm especially, like, I am in the military, and I deal with, like, equipment that tracks real vessels and submarines and surface ships, so I kind of understand tracking software and how it works. I'm just trying to envision what it is these pieces of equipment are doing to Rambo. I'm trying to visualize the actual work these guys are doing, other than just looking busy for a film. It's just kind of funny. But you're right about the fish out of water. You're right, because he'll hint at it later. You know, the mind's the best weapon, and how the technology versus man, which again was the same theme that Sly covers in part four of Rocky. It's that man versus machine. And so both Cameron and Sly at the same time in 85, as computers were becoming more of home use and what have you, there was that, I guess there was a dialogue in popular culture at the time for sure, will machine and or computers overtake that of a man's job?
But all this is for you. Impressed? Besides monitoring devices you see here, you'll be issued every ultra-modern piece of equipment we have to ensure your safety. Rambo, you can feel totally safe because we have the most advanced weapons in the world available to us.
I've always believed that the mind is the best weapon.
Times change.
For some people. Okay, so I love how he says the mind's the best weapon. Now, Rambo, you're right. You can't operate even a gun if you don't know how to, you know, load it properly, clean your weapon, and shoot. You got to have a smart mind to shoot properly or be a good shot and all that good stuff. But again, Murdoch says, oh, this stuff is here to protect you. You can totally feel safe. Which is, and when Rambo's saying, look, I'm down in the jungle, and if I have people firing on me or whatever, I don't know what these machines are going to do to help me in that firefight. And even today's technology, I wonder how that's possible. Like, at the end of the day, it is the soldier on the ground. And that's what Rambo's saying here. At the end of the day, it's me and my mind and my skill and my smarts that will get me out of a hot spot, not all this technology around me.
Yeah, no, most definitely. And the other thing that I noticed, too, that I really like is, I mean, you have some great character actors here. The wonderful Charles Napier. Yeah. I mean, he plays Murdoch, who's great. I don't know if you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, but he had a wonderful appearance.
Yeah,
he was the barber who got really pissed off at Larry. You know, he's when you would hire Charles Napier, you know that you're going to have a great role. I mean, he's very brief in The Cable Guy. But he's wonderful in that. The one thing that I don't know if you guys have touched upon, but the thing about the Rambo series that's really interesting, I mean, is we're five movies in, okay, and I highly doubt we'll be getting any more, but you never know. But what's really interesting is I noticed Martin Cove is in this, okay, and you know, I've always loved Martin Cove, and I think Martin Cove, when you hire him, that right there is a really good villain. But have you ever noticed how you could argue the first Rambo movie, First Blood, gave John Rambo a really good villain in the form of Brian Dennehy, okay? But the rest of the movies, yeah, there's villains that he's fighting, but there's never really that real villain with teeth mm-hmm. that really puts up a fight for Rambo. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, and that's really what's interesting. I mean, looking back at, like, say, for example, Rambo 2, 3, 4, and 5, yeah, you know that Rambo was kicking ass and was beating the bad guys up, we can say. But there really wasn't that real villain that you can remember. Right? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If you think about it, with any of the Rocky movies, you can name who the villain was in every one of those movies because...
The antagonist.
Yeah. There you go. The antagonist. But these films, they have them, yes, but they've never really had their real moment on camera to really, really put up a real fight, I guess, for Rambo. And I think a lot of that is because these are Rambo movies. You know going in that he is the main star. I guess that's a long tangent, so I do apologize.
No, it was a great discussion, but no, I want all my guest hosts to bring in their thoughts, and you'll be on every episode, right? So I want to hear your thoughts on future movies as well.
But I'm looking at this, and I'm just thinking, like, Martin Cove, that's a great villain right there. And that's a great villain. Why didn't they, you know, they should have given him more where he got to have that final one-on-one fight against Rambo. And of course Rambo would win because that's what we're here for. But you never really got that with any of these movies, did you?
So his character, Erickson, in this film would have been a good, so to speak, kind of, because he's a big guy too, very capable, looking man, intimidating man, and personality. So he would have been a good one to go hand to hand with Rambo. But that would have to kind of tweak the script a little bit to make him like a bad guy, because Rambo would not kill fellow American soldier unless it was legit turncoat that this guy was like, you know, working for the other side, or, you know, killing POWs himself or something like that. Because the enemy here is the government in this film. That's the thing. And so you're right, you can't fight the government, so to speak, and the technology, which was at the end of the film. Spoiler alert, when he shoots up all the computers. But that's the enemy is the bureaucratic BS that Rambo has to deal with. And, you know, just let me fight this war and we'll win. That's what this whole movie is about, is you just let, you know, that's what happens in the first episode of the season when Colonel Chapman says, this time it's up to you if we win or not, Rambo. And that's exactly what this whole movie is about, is Rambo, when he's allowed to do what, or yeah, when you give him permission to do whatever he needs to do to win a war, he's going to win the war. It's a little bit silly to think of one man can win the war, but that's the Rambo character. You're right about the one-on-one type villain. It would have been kind of nice had they investigated it. They did a little bit in Rambo 3 with the Russian, I forget his name, but the Russian actor/character. You know, he was kind of like the, you know, the bad villainy type. But they kind of missed some opportunities with part 4 and 5 to have sort of like a James Bond type leader in the other films, that Rambo would still have to go through the baddies, but then he could have a one-on-one with a counterpart that was kind of, I never thought of that. I never really thought that the Rambo films never really had the last boss type villain. And it would have been nice to maybe have that investigated. So it would have been kind of nice that he had a mono type fight with a counterpart that was both smart and a strong like Rambo, to have that end fight. Yeah, good point. Really, I never thought of that.
I think, yeah.
Don't let me interrupt you, Colonel. Upon insertion, call into base camp on Transat, and then proceed to Point Hawk September to rendezvous with your ground contact. Indigenous Agent Kobau.
Is he listening?
Indigenous Agent Kobau.
So Murdoch's giving all these instructions and everything, and this reminds me of my wife. Ryan, are you listening to me? And they have found that you can repeat the last thing you heard. So this kind of reminds me of, like, I'll repeat the last thing my wife said to me. Like, yes, honey, turn on the oven to 375. But I didn't hear what food item to put in or anything like that. I just repeated the last thing that she says to me, because I'm not listening per se. Like, I'm distracted. It's not that I'm ignoring her, but I'm distracted. So I'll just repeat the last thing of her. So it's just funny. This little scene reminds me of a married couple where he repeats the last thing that he said, but did he catch everything? But yes, the idea is that he's observing the technology around him, looking at the computers, but at the same time, he is listening to the mission that's been given to him. But he's actually showing the lack of respect that he has for this bureaucratic guy, Murdoch, because he doesn't trust him, doesn't like him, and this is his lack of respect. When Troutman talks to Rambo, he listens, gives his full attention, says, yes, sir. But when this tie-wearing, out-of-shape bureaucratic guy, government official, is talking, Rambo's like, I'm listening, but I'm not paying you any respect by even giving you eye contact.
Definitely. Well, Rambo's processing the information. That's what it is. Like, he's listening, but he's processing everything that's going on, going along with what talking about with you and your wife or whatever. And I think any married couple, it's like, yes, I'm listening. Give me a second to process what is going on. I don't have to give you my answer right away at this moment. Let me process the information, and then I will really relay to you my opinion and my response, please. So there you go. It's Rambo and Murdoch, the married couple that we never thought.
A little spin-off sitcom in their old, in their golden years, bickering at each other.
Colonel, I'm sure he's still not unbalanced from the war. We can't afford to have anybody involved in this mission. He might crack under pressure in that hell.
Pressure? Let me just say that Rambo is the best combat vet I've ever seen. A pure fighting machine with only a desire to win a war that someone else lost. And if winning means he has to die, he'll die. No fear, no regrets. And one more thing. What you choose to call hell, he calls home.
Does Troutman, before he starts his workday, Does he figure out all the things he wants to say about Rambo? You know, like, that's enough to make Billy go puke. You know, all these things, all these quick one-liners.
I was just thinking, if it's not available on YouTube yet, then someone should do it. But a compilation video of Troutman stroking Rambo's ego.
Oh, it's a great
and
idea.
And just talking about him, you know what I mean? Because every one of these films, I mean, what's so funny about it is the last film we had Troutman gave so many little lines about, you know, how amazing Rambo is and what kind of a person he is and how hell is his home and everything. And in case that wasn't, done, we're going to get it again in this film. And I think he does it a couple more times. Sadly or thankfully, depending on how you want to look at it, this is the last of the Rambo films where we get little monologues telling us about how amazing and badass Rambo is. Mainly because in Richard Crenna died, what was it, late 90s?
Early by the time the fourth film came out, Richard Crenna passed.
Yeah, he was gone. And then in Rambo 3, he's kidnapped. Yeah. Which is the impetus for Rambo going in, so you don't need that there. But it's one of those lines that's a little silly, but
I love
will
it. We all
forever
love it.
Be iconic.
We all love it. What you call hell, he calls home. I sort of mean, like, does Troutman have those ready to go? Has he said this before to someone else? I just love how he's got this running resume of Rambo with him everywhere he goes. It's just fun. Now we're going to see some, they're prepping the plane that they're going to go on, and we're going to see further instruction from Troutman now telling Rambo how to get ready for this mission.
Start APU.
Now that's a little throwaway line there. We're one of the ground crew getting the plane ready. Says stand by APU. APU, yeah, it's just an auxiliary processing unit. So it's basically just your, again, it's another like throwaway line, but it's showing the audience and us that get the computer ready, get the computer on board the plane. This is a high tech plane. We're dealing with high tech computer stuff. So they're, it's basically your CPU. It's your APU, just gathers the CPU of a computer. Another little nod to the technology that's getting ready for Rambo's mission, his big takeoff here. Now we're going to the big sequence here of course, Rambo sharpening his knife, and it's muscle porn. You know, we just have these close-up shots of Sly's arms and his veins and the sweat glistening off his arms and the hair. You can even see the microfiber hair on this high def of, you know, on his shoulder.
High definition, yeah. But this is what we came for. I mean, we can look at it now. We can look at it now, Ryan, and say, oh my God, this is silly. But as a kid, this was awesome. I mean, you know, and here I was talking about earlier how I really didn't see a full on Rambo movie from beginning to end, you know, until my teens, but it was scenes like this, the suiting up montage in Commando. Mm-hmm. It's so badass and it's so cool. Just the shot. I mean, and you would be lying if you told me that as a kid, you did not emulate these kind of scenes when you were getting dressed in the morning.
Of course.
I don't know if you did, but I did as well. I mean, I loved it. So this is awesome. Sorry. Let's watch.
Well, and he's going to do his boots up. And again, I'm in the Navy and right now I'm training a basic recruit training. So I'm doing like drill sergeant.
And you put your boots on every day?
Dude, I put on my Army boots because I wear the green uniform when I'm doing basic training, not the Navy uniform. And I put on the Army boots and there's a part of me that every time I do that top part of the boot, I'm thinking of the Rambo montage, which I'm nothing like.
This is silly, you know, but I remember when I was in Little League playing football. I played Little League football and I remember putting on my cleats and doing that, putting on my cleats, like thinking that there was a camera and then it was in, you know, watching me or whatever. And I'm lacing up my cleats and throwing on the shoulder pads and everything like that. I think Rambo, this was one of those films that kind of made the suiting up montage this amazing spectacle to behold.
And now we get that theme music, which is so great by Jerry Goldsmith, which I use at the beginning of all my episodes. And it's this part of the film that I use that theme music from. And I just love that. I don't know anything about instruments, but there's that sound. It must be some sort of keyboard sound or something where he makes that new sound. I don't know how it's done. I don't know if you know anything about music, but or what instruments being used. Now what we're seeing too is, remember Rocky IV, where he's training in the woods, in the wilderness. Then we see Drago training with the computerized facility. We're seeing this here. It's not as obvious, but it's there because we just saw the computer being booted up for the plane. But now we're seeing the human part getting ready. And that's the Rambo part. It's him getting ready. It's his mind. He's getting his mind ready. This is his weapon. He sharpened his knife and getting his kit ready, yes. But there's a montage here of him getting ready to go to war, of him putting his gear on and getting his gear ready. But then we keep cutting to the computers getting ready. And I think that's obviously deliberate to show you they're both getting prepared, but only one's going to be a victor at the end of this film.
No, it's in stark contrast, yeah.
You know that sound? That I don't know what instrument that is. Would you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's yeah.
Now you got Erickson getting the plane ready, you know. Back to Rambo, getting his, there's the tying of his laces, back to the computers. So you get this back and forth. Little, you know, of course, you see Rambo put his little mini blades in, a classic scene there, and we know, I wonder if that's going to come into play later. And of course, the shot of that great Rambo knife, and I think that Rambo knife really became more iconic with the second film than it even did in the first film. It just seems bigger and badder in this film than it did in the first film. The serrated blade on the one side and the curved saber-like point. I think it got more famous because of this film than even the first film.
That's without a doubt. That's without a doubt, yeah.
Computer's getting ready. Now he's loading his clips, rounds. Back to the plane getting ready. Doing a weapons check. Checking the sights. And I love that. So, subtle there. Rambo's looking through his weapon sights, you know, to make sure that they're good to go. And then we cut right to a guy looking at the computer sights. So I like the little contrast there. The computer nerd, you know, looking at the computer screen to make sure it's good to go, but you got Rambo checking his weapons. Classic film, kids today, like, what is he loading into that device there? Film, friends, film. You remember film?
It's interesting watching, looking back at some of these films, and you think, if they had done this nowadays, how much different it would be. You know what I mean? I feel like a Rambo film nowadays, you know, this concept, him going in, they wouldn't even be sending a man on this mission. They would just be using drones.
We did get a comment on Discord from Dave. He said, regarding that instrument, he says, it sounds like a vibrant slap. Might have to YouTube that. But he mentions, you can hear one at the beginning of the songs Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne and Sweet Emotion by Aerosmith, which I know the Aerosmith, well, I don't know both songs very well, but I know the sound he's talking about for the Sweet Emotion sound. So that might be the same instrument. So I'm going to look up vibrant slap.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. I like that. Searching now. Now live. Now he's loading in the arrows.
D minus five.
He's got the explosive heads. I love how the case that he puts the explosive arrows in, the arrowheads in, it says explosive. Okay, well, that's for the audience to know, because in real life, there's no reason that Rambo would have to be told that he is arming himself with explosive arrows. Like, he knows what he's carrying. I just find that funny, but that's for the audience to know that these arrowheads will explode. Later in the film, folks, stand by. Another shot of the Rambo blade. Okay. You've got
30. I was just loving basking in the glory of it. of how. As I'm trying to think, it's been a while since we've gotten a full on suiting up montage in a film, non Rambo related or otherwise, you know what I mean? Well, I guess a lot of those superhero films always have some kind of suiting up montage of some kind. But, I mean, and perhaps it's nostalgic, but they're nowhere near as cool as this.
No, and there's a couple thoughts I had about this film. Oh, sorry, this sequence in the film. Two things. One, I really like Rambo's getup here. I do kind of like that he's wearing this Snake Eyes outfit from G.I. Joe type combat, all in black, body armor / he's got his helmet. I don't know, I always thought he looked really good and cool, and it's odd to say this. It kind of reminds me of Return of the Jedi, when Luke Skywalker comes into Jabba's palace and he's wearing the black robes, and you never see it again. And I thought that was the coolest Luke ever looked, was wearing the black outfit. I kind of wish Rambo wore this getup a little bit longer in the film. I kind of wanted to geek out with this. Not that he had to have all the high tech stuff, so to speak, but I kind of like the idea of him gearing up a little bit more. We're going to see, of course, what happens to this gear. So I kind of find the montage, as cool as it was, it doesn't pay off so much later in the film, because he's just back down to his underwear almost.
Yeah, no, I agree completely, and I think that is 100% Stallone's decision. If Stallone had the physique that he had in First Blood Part 1, then yes, he would be wearing something like this. But kind of like what we talked about, he completely transformed his body and, you know, is down to this chiseled frame that you see that has maybe 2%. I think Stallone was of the opinion, yeah, no, I'm going to be shirtless for about 70% of this film.
And I love it. It's great eye candy because it's showing that, again, it's that it's a Superman with a cape. You have to have Superman with a cape. But it's just the flip side for Sly, of course, is now, you know, you have to take the cape off Sly. So you can see his physique, what he's worked so hard on, fair enough. And that's what makes him superhuman, metahuman, is that he's got this physique that you and I don't have. And that's what makes him Rambo. Yeah, I know. I just like the outfit he's wearing right now. It's kind of cool.
6 hours to get the hell in and out. So don't stop to smell the roses, okay?
Yeah.
run into any trouble, try to get to the hilltop extraction site marked on your map.
Good luck, son.
Thanks. Let's go. You remember Murdoch cities with the 2nd Battalion, 3rd Marines at Khartoum in 66?
Yeah.
The 2nd Battalion was a dead sink. You're the only one I trust.
Why is Rambo going on this mission at this point? I mean, if he saw a red flag that this Murdoch guy is fibbing and lying, you have to think at a certain point Rambo would have said, would have pulled Troutman aside before he even put on that black suit and suited up. He would have pulled him aside saying, hey, look, Troutman, these guys are BSing us here. Like, isn't
great
right.
Great question. That's a fair question. Sorry. And that's a great question. I think to answer that question is Rambo had no intention to follow in the orders that Murdoch gave him. He's going to rescue them as well. And I think that was his goal all along was, you drop me there, I'm taking these guys. There's no way that Rambo's leaving any soldier behind. Basically, he's getting a free ride is what I'm getting at. At the end of the day, he's going to get a free ride to the drop zone. He knows Murdoch's not going to save him. He tells Troutman, you know, abort mission. Somebody else comes in here, they're just going to fire Rambo, and Rambo gets fired, and they're going to somebody else will get sent here because Murdoch said in an earlier scene that Rambo is one of three people that the computer decided was good for this job. I always wondered who those other two people were. You know, Chuck Norris and Arnold, probably. So Rambo got selected for this job. So that's why he's going. So great question. So that's why he's telling Troutman. So now Troutman's got his ear to the ground on this side. Hey, don't trust everything Murdoch says. He's lying to us. He's not telling us the whole truth. I'm still going to go on this mission because at the end of the day, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I want you to take care of things here. Basically, now that Troutman knows, he's actually going to keep Rambo more safe.
But Sounds good. Yeah.
But that's a fair point, though. Yeah. I love how the planes painted all black to make it more covert. Like it's like this night black, no markings on it whatsoever. Almost like a stealth plane.
Think you'll find someone?
POWs? Doubtful. But there's people to satisfy. Questions that have to be answered.
Don't sound too emotional about it.
Wasn't my war, Colonel. Just here to clean up the mess.
So here's that bureaucratic government BS type personality where he's so blasé about these lives, you know, like, oh, there's no people there to save anyways. You know, who cares? It wasn't my war. I'm just here to clean up the mess. Just that blasé of, they're not even people, so they're just numbers, they're just statistics. We're just here to satisfy, you know, the taxpayers or the people in charge. And that's why Trauma says, you're not being very emotional about this. Well, yeah, it's not my war. It's not, you know, I'm just here to clean up the mess. Ugh.
It's at this point, they're not being coy about it in the least. I feel like in a lot of films done nowadays, they would kind of dance around him being a bad guy, and then in the third act, it would be revealed. You know, you'd kind of have an idea at the beginning, like, I think this guy's going to turn, and then at the end, you know, that when everything hits the fan, it's revealed. This, James Cameron and everyone are not even beating around the bush at all. They're letting you know front and center, yeah, he's going to be the bad guy, and Rambo's going to deliver some some justice to him at the end. They're not being coy about this in the least, but it works.
You're right, but there are some good surprises coming up. I mean, obviously, people that have seen the film know it, and I don't want to talk about it right now. I don't want to get too far ahead, but it is coming. There is a, you know, quote-unquote, a betrayal coming later in the film that even I think is very well written, and I don't think a lot of moviegoers saw coming. So we know that Murdoch is not on board here, but the betrayal that comes midway through the film is actually quite a turn in the film. So now in the air, flying over, covering a lot of ground to the drop zone. And they're in this awkward conversation moment. You know, Rambo's just sitting there ready to disembark the plane. And he's with that other guy, the blonde-haired guy that was beside the Coke machine. We don't know much about this guy. You can tell he's like even more of a dick than Erickson and Murdoch. But he's basically Murdoch's, like, I think Erickson wasn't quite new with Murdoch's deal, but I think this guy, this blonde-haired guy, I think he is under Murdoch's thumb. More of the henchman, so to speak. There's the technology tracking the plane's progress. Troutman overlooking the maps, the drop zone. Make sure everything's okay. I love the speed-up film for the plane flight in this. It's just kind of funny because they probably used a helicopter at the end of the day to film these overhead shots, but they speed up the film. It just doesn't look like a natural flight pattern. It happens a couple times in the sequence where the film is obviously speed up to indicate the speed of the plane vice a helicopter.
I didn't even think about that, but, you know, I mean, it works. We don't want to see Rambo on a plane. You know what I mean? We want to see him, drop him in the action as soon as possible. I mean, we're now, I don't know how many minutes we are in the film at this point, but what is it? Yeah, we're like 15 minutes in. Yeah, yeah. Like let's get to the action and let's show Rambo doing what he does best.
AWOPS 2-5 has arrived. They're holding timeline.
Session minus one.
So he says AWOPS 2-5 has arrived, whatever. They're holding timeline. I actually tried to Google AWOPS, but I couldn't figure out what that stood for. AWOPS, something like area without permission. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. I guess the error with our personnel, maybe aircraft with our people. Maybe that's what it is. Oh, maybe I've just made that up in my head. Because he's trying to say that the timeline is being met or something. So AWOPS could mean maybe aircraft with our people. Maybe that's what it stands for. I just made it up.
Wolf Den, over.
Oh, you got something there, Sean?
AWOP stands for All Weather Operations. These are approvals that allow aircrafts to make low visibility takeoffs and landings. These are the approvals that allow aircrafts to make low visibility takeoffs and landings.
Okay, so they are flying low. There you go. Okay, we were there at the 250-foot ceiling, which is very low. I like my acronym better. Aircraft with our people. Makes sense, but I guess the Earth makes more sense, so that's the truth. Now, Rambo wearing his helmet with goggles, he does look silly there, I'm not gonna lie. He did look a little silly. That's a great shot there. See that? Yeah. He does look a little silly. Like, we don't see too many films with Sly wearing goggles, so take a look. Soak it in, people.
It's not long, and I mean, let's face it, if we're going to go along with the narrative and believe that he is this force of nature on the battlefield, well then yeah, we need to believe that he can do everything, and one of the things he can do is drop out of a plane safely, and so here you go.
Yeah, yeah, you need to wear protection. Even Rambo has to wear headgear, because you slam against that plane without a headgear, your head would be melon. Now he's holding his, I love how he's holding his weapon in his hands. Look, I guess at some point he straps it to his backpack or whatever, but I don't know why he's holding his weapon. You got to make that thing secure. You're going to be dropping out of a plane at I don't know what kind of velocity. You're not going to be able to hold on to the weapon. It's just kind of funny how he's holding the weapon. It should already be strapped to his gear.
Back in the Badlands, my man. Stand by your position.
Insertion minus 15 seconds.
Party time.
Insertion time.
5 seconds.
4, 3, 2.
Sounds like my date.
Jump away.
As far as I can tell, I don't know. This is 85, so is that a really good backdrop sequence, or is that somebody really on the side of a plane? I actually don't know. I mean, they did stunt work back then. Look at all the James Bond films, of course, and even the Rambo films has a lot of stunt work. That's a good scene right there. I still can't tell to this day if that's really good, well done in the studio stunt scene, or they really got some above the air shots of a guy hanging on the side of the plane.
If it is an above-the-air shot, I imagine it's got to be fairly low, and I think we can both agree that that's not Stallone. But it's interesting. I love the, you commented the insert shot, but yeah, I'm trying to think. I can think of off the top of my head at least 4 other films now that have applied that same shot of you know what I mean? And you know that all it took was, you know, not even a fully built plane, but you know, the door of a plane that the camera centers on just enough and the person, the actor is suited up and everything and then jumps maybe 2 feet off, onto the set. And then they, splice in some footage of the plane. You know what I mean? It works, but you look at now, I mean, even the coloring is slightly off, you know what I mean? From the plane footage. And then when you look at, Stallone in the cabin or whatever, getting ready to jump off, you can tell that that is not.
Yeah.
Not
it's
the
just,
same thing.
I think there's only a couple shots. This being one of them where it looks like it might be a real stunt. But then, of course, all the other close-up shots of Sly's face and the cutting of the kit, and I forget this guy's name. I think it's Lars or something like that. This guy here, the blonde hair. Yeah, those sequences. But this sequence right here in particular, there might be one more where they show it, where I think it might be a real stunt, but everything else, of course, is in studio stunts. If so, well done. Of course, that studio. Just that one shot. That shot right there. That looks like it might be a real stunt.
The turbulence! He's hung up!
course,
it'll be torn apart.
Yeah, here we go.
It's gonna be torn apart.
Condition red. He's hung up.
What do you mean he's hung up? What happened?
He's being dragged.
Lifer, cut him loose.
I can't.
Lifer. His name's Lifer. What a weird name. Lifer, cut him loose. Now, there's no way he's going to be able to do anything with his bare hands. So you got the blonde-haired guy named Lifer trying to undo the strap with his bare hands, which is fine, but the air velocity, the weight of the of Rambo pulling on that strap, yeah, you have to cut it. You don't have enough strength to pull his weight in to make that loose. It's almost like he's pretending to help. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, and it's not setting the best tone for this mission. If they can't
even... Yeah, we're off to a good start. What do you call it when they put something in a plot to move the plot? What do they call it again?
Plot device.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm getting at. This is a plot device where he's been geared up with all this high-tech equipment, but it's the very equipment that ties him up here that he's going to have to let loose. He's got to let this technology go and just be Rambo on the field. So now that's how he gets rid of it. So it's a bit of a trope or plot device to get rid of the equipment. Like, he has to load himself up with it, but now he's going to get rid of it to save his own life. Which saves his life, right? Now he can just be rambling on the ground without any of this high-tech stuff. He's cutting off, there goes the gun. I told you, he's supposed to strap it properly. So, the gun goes away.
Eric, abort the mission. Pull out.
It'll kill him. He'll be torn apart.
So they're still showing you that he's flying at a low altitude. So now he says, it's kind of waste of equipment. So there goes all the high-tech stuff. He's now gone. Nice, got rid of the knife, just cut himself loose. There he goes.
He's out!
Come in here, this is Dragonfly 1. You read? Over.
Dragonfly 1, come in, I read you.
Any visual bearings by flares?
Negative. We didn't see anything.
Now, Rambo wouldn't shoot a flare. I like how Trauman asks, is there any visual sighting by flares? Like, he just got off the plane. It's kind of quick for him to pop a flare, which I thought was weird. It's kind of a weird question. Trauman should know better that he's still falling in the air. He's not going to fire off a flare. But, and also, Rambo wouldn't do that. That's tactically a huge mistake to alert the enemy that I'm landing. Like, the whole point of this operation is to be covert. He is way off course. All that time, they've been going whatever miles per hour off the drop zone, the insertion point. Rambo's going to have to make his way back to the rendezvous with Cobao by foot. I just found that interesting. You assume he's going to be late to the meeting because he's been flown over that terrain.
Maybe the smart thing to do is to abort the mission right now before there's any more complications. I mean, who could survive something like that?
He deserves the benefit of the doubt. He's got 36 hours to complete the mission and reach the extraction point. We owe him that.
Well, of course we do. But understand something now. In 36 hours, we pull out.
All right, so right there is where we're going to stop. Right away, we get Murdoch almost kind of like poo-pooing. Like, I guess he's just dead, which is absolutely ridiculous. Without a body or any indication, and Trauman is absolutely correct. We owe him 36 hours. Look, he did drop. He was alive when he fell out of that plane. His parachute was shown to deploy. Give him the 36 hours, buddy. Yeah, absolutely. The disregard this person has for Rambo's life and the POWs it's very apparent. Absolutely, Colonel Trauman has every right to say, no. We're giving him the 36 hours.
Most definitely. Like I said, it's pretty telegraphed from the get-go that Murdoch and everybody, these bureaucrats that are back on the home base looking at their computers, those are going to be one of the obstacles that Rambo is going to have to defeat. But yeah, no, this was cool to go back through and watch. I don't think I've seen this film countless times. I don't think I've ever gone through it with such a fine comb as we've done today. So yeah, this has been fun.
Oh, I'm glad you had a good time, and hopefully we'll have, well, I would love to have you on again. I don't have that many guest co-hosts lined up, but enough that I can't promise people every season anymore, is what I should have said. I the beginning of season one, I was telling the first like four or five guest hosts, have you on again in season two, and then I ran out of film, and I still had guest hosts lined up no more promises how long guest hosts will be on. However, we will record together again, Sean.
Definitely.
All right, Sean, it's been an absolute pleasure. Check out his podcast, I Must Break This Podcast, and wherever podcasts are sold. Unfortunately, though, that's it. This episode is over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.